This is Carol Bond returning with the July 28th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. There are no new obituaries in today's paper, but there is an article, a tribute article, to a woman who died a few days ago. The headline is, Rude Was Dedicated to Helping the Homeless. It was written by Emily Steele. Nancy Ann Rude, a compassionate champion for Decatur's homeless population, died July 23rd at home after a battle with ovarian cancer. She was 53. Rude worked as a social worker for 25 years, the last 16 as director of Oasis Day Center, which opened in 1999. It was very much a mission, said Diana Nabe, president and CEO of Heritage Behavioral Health Center. I don't think she would have stuck with it for as long as she did if it hadn't been her calling. Rude oversaw its 2001 move to larger quarters, giving hundreds of people a place to shower, do laundry, and access other services. She also kept the shelter operated by Heritage afloat through numerous federal and state funding cuts. Nabe said Rude's tough love, but also respectful attitude, helped her build a rapport with Oasis clients. She had a knack of knowing when somebody was ready for help, Nabe said. Twice, she was nominated for Decatur's Women of Excellence Award in 2009 and 2011, but Rude never sought any personal attention. She wanted to be out there working with the folks directly, Nabe said. After being diagnosed with cancer, Rude continued to work before taking medical leave in August. Many people didn't even know she had been sick. Oasis Associate Director Todd Tuggle remembers a meeting years ago when he first considered Rude his friendly partner in crime. Events were being planned for a homeless awareness week that neglected to include anything for the homeless. She slid him a note that read, "What about a lock-in for homeless people?" They ended up doing 4 overnight social events. "This typified Nancy," Tuggle said. "We did no publicity, there was no media, because it wasn't about us. It was about them." In a March 25th column in the Herald and Review, Rude wrote about receiving accolades for her ability to relate to people. "The truth is, during my past 25 years in the field, or trenches, of social work, I have met countless people from every walk of life, on different stages of their journey, who have worked and continue to work just as hard or harder, faced just as many challenges or more, and made bigger sacrifices than I have," she wrote. "For some reason, I just happened to get attention." Funeral services were Monday. Let's find out what Abby's writers are saying this morning. "Dear Abby, I am a 58-year-old, twice divorced, hard-working, middle-class female. I spend most of my time working and involved with my 3 adult children. About a year ago, I started dating someone. He is 63, very helpful, and claims he's madly in love with me and appreciates this opportunity for a normal, wholesome life. Occasionally, I'll catch him staring at women's butts. It bothers me a bit, but oh well, he's a man. Last week, our family went camping. At least a dozen times, I saw him position himself so that he could stare at my 40-year-old daughter's behind. Keep in mind, my daughter dresses very conservatively, and this trip was almost all jeans and t-shirts. As we were packed up and ready to head home, she said she had to relieve herself and headed into the bushes. This is a remote campground. Instead of my boyfriend looking the other way, as we all did, he stared and gawked in her direction, obviously trying to sneak a peek. Abby, I am devastated and disgusted. Please give me your take on this. Signed, Normal or Not, in New York. Dear Normal, for a man to look at women's body parts is normal, but what your boyfriend did goes beyond that. For him to try to sneak a peek at your daughter while she relieved herself indicates that he is a voyeur. Now you must determine whether he just takes advantage of an opportunity or he actively seeks it out, which could present a problem in the future. The next article, the next letter. Dear Abby, my daughter is a 29-year-old new mother. I know times have changed since I was a new mom, but the restrictions my daughter has put on visiting her and my new grandson are unrealistic. Since his birth 3 weeks ago, I have seen him only once at the hospital. She has taken him on two outings, one where there were 10 people and another where there were more than 100. My grandson has not yet received any of his childhood vaccinations. My daughter now says that when I visit, I must change into freshly washed clothes before entering her house. She's afraid that the secondhand smoke will harm him. I'm not unintelligent. I have bought disinfectants to spray on myself as well as breath strips. I also wash my hands, arms and face before I hold him. Am I unrealistic in thinking she's asking too much, or should I say something to her and let her know how much she has hurt me? Signed, Crying Day and Night. Dear Crying, I do think you should talk to your daughter. What she may be trying to do is encourage you to quit smoking. I doubt that she's doing it to be hurtful. Her motivation may be that she knows how unhealthy smoking is and would like you to be around until your grandchild is well into adulthood. The odds of that happening will be higher if you can find a way to give up tobacco. And when you do, consider putting all the money you save, and it will be plenty, into an education fund for your grandson. We'll continue reading some columnists. This one is a column to somebody called Mary, and its first one begins, Dear Mary, I'm going to have to buy a new vacuum cleaner soon and wanted to know your thoughts on the new Shark Navigator with the lift-off container. Signed, Wanda. Dear Wanda, oh my, you could not make a better choice than a Shark Navigator vacuum. For me, Shark Navigator needs to be added to the Wonders of the World list. I'd never known a vacuum cleaner that comes even close to a Shark for extracting dirt from carpet. It's been 3 years now since I wrote about my first Shark, and the headline was called So Disgusting I'm Embarrassed to Tell. Then I couldn't help myself and wrote about it again. If you've been following along for the past few years, you know that the Hubs and I have recently relocated, and by that I mean the biggest move of our lives, and are now getting settled into our new home. This house has, count 'em, 29 stairs, each one of them carpeted. We love this house for its views and vaulted ceilings. However, I am not a fan of carpeted stairs because how do you clean them? I don't mean sort of clean them. I mean really vacuum every bit of dirt, crud, and grime out of that carpet. And a few weeks ago, I bought the new Shark Professional Navigator Lift-Away so I could deep clean all of these carpeted stairs. Wow, this thing is a miracle worker. It's that lift-away feature that makes it so easy to vacuum stairs, every edge, and even those hard-to-reach crevices. I'm in love. My opinion is that you could not get a better vacuum than a Shark Navigator at any price. What's remarkable to me is that this vacuum is not expensive, and I would put it up against the most expensive vacuum any day. I love it. It's quieter than my original Shark, and with that lift-away feature, I can deep clean my stairs so easily. And every time I do, I can't believe what comes out of that carpet. Am I the only one who wonders where all that dirt comes from in an otherwise clean house? Those are my thoughts. I can't wait to hear yours. This column is called Everyday Cheapskate. Here's another letter. Dear Mary, years ago, I lent money to two friends, fully expecting to be repaid. One took several years to pay me back. I had given up hope, then finally received a check from her. The other never paid me back, even though I said she could do so at $10 a month for as long as it took at 0% interest. She moved away and left no contact information. I was as distressed by this dishonorable behavior as I was about not being repaid, although, of course, I took a loss. Never again. Now I've added this money rule to my life. Never lend more than you can afford to lose. Signed, Marianne. Dear Marianne, that's a great rule to live by, and I'll take it one step further. If it is money you can afford to lose when considering a loan to a friend or family member, save yourself the trouble and just make it a gift from the get-go. That will relieve a lot of stress, wonder, and worry, and quite possibly preserve and protect the relationship. We have two short letters to Dr. Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, have you heard that lymphoma patients are more likely than others to develop blood clots after surgery? I nearly died of a pulmonary embolus 6 days after hernia surgery. I have indolent non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and never have had chemotherapy or radiation treatment. Signed, PR. Answer. People with many different types of cancers are at higher risk for blood clotting. Those with cancer of the pancreas, colon, stomach, lung, kidney, or brain are among the highest risk. Blood cancers like leukemia and lymphoma also increase the risk of a blood clot. Surgery already increases blood clot risk, but cancer further increases the risk of blood clots. The combination of cancer, even an indolent lymphoma, and routine surgery imparts about a 6% risk of blood clots, which is high enough that routine anticoagulation certainly should be considered. People with cancer should have a discussion with their surgeon about anticoagulation around surgery. The next article. Dear Dr. Roach, last year I was treated for gout and was prescribed allopurinol, 100 milligrams, once a day. Approximately 5 to 6 months after I started taking it, I became lethargic and was not feeling myself. I am a very young 77 years old and suddenly lost my sense of taste. I was taken off the medicine and still have little taste sensation other than citrus fruits, apples, and spices. I was told that this could last for months, years, or forever. Do you have any suggestions for me? I am eating as before, hoping that I will recover my taste. Signed, N.K. Answer. I certainly found that allopurinol can cause loss of taste sensation, but the Food and Drug Administration case reports don't say how long it can last. Unfortunately, I can't find any reliable way or even plausible way to increase the likelihood of getting your taste sensation back. We'll turn our attention now to the Decatur Tribune, and the date for this is today, July 28th. We'll begin with Paul Osborne's City Beat, the kind of news that doesn't seem real. And here's what he writes. I received a call at my office early Friday morning that Mayor Mike McElroy had died a few minutes earlier. I couldn't believe what I had just heard and sat back in my chair trying to comprehend the words. Mayor McElroy and passed away were words that didn't fit together. My feeling of loss was significant, and it was hard to concentrate on anything else that day. Tuna had been my friend for many years. We were elected to municipal office in 2003. He was elected city councilman, and I was elected mayor. We were the only new faces on the council, and there was a certain bond that immediately formed between us, and most people know he was my strongest supporter on the council, even during times on projects that were hotly debated. Both of us were reelected to our respective offices 4 years later, and when I left office, he was the first person to check on me to see how I was doing. He also stopped by the newspaper to tell me that he was going to run for mayor and push ahead some projects that we had been working on, which he did. We stayed in touch after he was elected mayor, endorsed by this newspaper, and we talked often about what was happening in the city. I always appreciated the fact that, although it wasn't necessary, he would include me in a groundbreaking or ribbon cutting of a project we had worked on together when I was mayor and had been completed while he was mayor. He told me and others that I had done a lot of work on the project before leaving office, and he wanted me to be a part of its completion. I'm sure some people wondered why I was a part of a few of those ceremonies, and in the seating arrangement, I tried to sit in the back row so that other members of the current council would get the recognition they deserve for voting to move the project ahead. He saw what I was trying to do, and he slapped his hand down on the seat of the chair next to him and said, "You're sitting right here, next to me." Tuna never forgot what we had gone through during the years we served, and I found that remarkable. As a result, I have hard hats and other items from participating in such events after I left the mayor's office, which in some way seemed more significant than some I received as mayor, because my friend didn't forget me. When Tuna was hospitalized for a heart issue during the time I was mayor, he called and apologized because he wouldn't be able to attend an upcoming council meeting. I told him not to worry about it, and the top priority was his health. When he returned to council in a fairly short time, he apologized to me again for missing the meeting. Tuna was always concerned about not letting anyone down. I couldn't help but think, after receiving news of his death, that had he survived what is believed to have been a heart attack on Friday, he would probably have apologized to the council and community for being hospitalized and unable to carry out his duties for a while. Tuna was always sensitive about carrying out his responsibilities. I know it seems a little strange, but whenever Tuna and I would see each other at some event or at the newspaper office or talk on the phone, it was always about what was happening in the city, and we would talk about the community like two people would talk about a sports team they love. Obviously, that was true when we served on council together, but that continued after I left office. I think a lot of people have been thinking about the last time they saw or talked with Tuna in the days since his death. There's been so many comments made about him and the relationships he had with people over the years. Sometimes people tend to exaggerate the positive aspects of a person's life after they pass away, but I don't think that's the case with Tuna. When I left the mayor's office, I couldn't have been more pleased that my friend Tuna was the next mayor chosen through election by the people to succeed me. I will miss him terribly as time goes by, and so will everyone who knew him. My thoughts and prayers have been with wife Lynn and their son Matt, family members, and their many, many friends. May God bless and comfort all of them, our community, and nation. What happens now? Decatur Mayor Pro Tem Julie Moore Wolf has assumed the duties of mayor on an interim basis until a new mayor is selected by the City Council. The Council can select Julie as mayor or another City Council member to serve as mayor. I reported in today's print edition of the Tribune that someone not on council could also be selected, based on what I remembered as a situation involving Mayor Anderson many years ago. However, I've now learned that state law dictates the selection of the next mayor must come from the City Council. So maybe that law went into effect since the appointment I remembered from many years ago. Or maybe my memory is faulty, so I will have to double check. The council has 60 days to make that appointment. The person chosen will serve until the next election in 2017, when the voters will make their decision on what person they want to fill the remaining 2 years of Mayor McElroy's term. In other local news, there's this. Maynard Senate honor Stockard O'Neill. The Illinois State Senate honored Decatur activist and civic leader Betsy Stockard O'Neill with a resolution last week. State Senator Andy Maynor, Democrat from Bunker Hill, sponsored the memorial resolution honoring Stockard O'Neill's life of service. Betsy was a pioneer and a true leader. She understood what kind of work it takes to save a community, and she did it regardless of difficulty. Decatur is truly a better place because of her, and her example will resonate through the years, Maynard said. Stockard O'Neill was the first African-American woman to serve on Decatur City Council. She was a leader in the city's anti-violence movement, founding the first Stop the Violence marches, the Youth Empowerment Agency, and Central Illinois' first violence prevention agency. She served the community's most marginalized individuals as a substance abuse counselor and was a longtime member of the North Jasper Street Church of Christ. We'll return again to the pages of the Decatur Herald and Review for this sports article called At Home in Amsterdam, and this was written by Justin Kahn. Molly McDowell surprised herself the last time she was back in the U.S. for a visit. When it was time for her to go back to Amsterdam, she told someone she was going home. "I tell everyone I have two homes now," McDowell said. "Fillmore will always be my home, but I've made a good life in Amsterdam, too. It's become my second home." In Illinois, McDowell will always be remembered from her days at Nokomis, where in 1998 and 99, she led the team to back-to-back state titles and was voted as Miss Basketball in 99. But Nokomis was just beginning the beginning of McDowell's basketball career. After 4 years playing at Southern Illinois, McDowell played 2 years in Europe before returning to the U.S. to coach for 3 years. But in 2008, she went back to Europe and signed with the pro-build Loon Lions in Amsterdam, where she played until retiring after 7 seasons in May. But after a short vacation following her retirement, McDowell returned to Amsterdam. She lives in Landsmeer, a small city 10 minutes north of Amsterdam. She coaches there, but her full-time job is as a sports video analyst. She said someday she may return to the U.S. to coach. Her passion remains basketball, but for now she's staying put. I've coached the same club team for 7 years, lived in the same area, and seen the same people, McDowell said. I've seen kids grow up. When I walk down the streets of Landsmeer, people know me. It feels like home. I have a very good group of friends here. I'll always miss my family and friends in the States, but I have people who have stepped into the role as my family here. I'm really enjoying it. Amsterdam was McDowell's first stop as a professional player. Though she played well in college, scoring 1,271 points and averaging 15.1 points as a senior, she wasn't satisfied with the experience and wanted to keep playing. In her first year as a pro, she played for BV Lilly and was named the league MVP. The next year, she played in Germany, but the following year, 2006, she signed with the Chicago Blaze on the National Women's Basketball League. At the time, the NWBL was a kind of developmental league for the WNBA, so I figured I would come home, play, and see if I could get a tryout. But 3 months before the season started, the NWBL folded. McDowell was left scrambling. She found a job as an assistant coach at Ashland University in Ohio. At that point, I had no intention of going back and didn't even think about it. I was 24, making really good money, and wanted to be a coach, so this was a good opportunity. McDowell missed playing but didn't give it much thought until she received an email in 2008. It was from the BV Lilly coach she played for her first year in Amsterdam. He said he was coaching another team now and wanted to know if I had any interest in coming back and playing. I thought about it for a while, then I quit my job and went back to Amsterdam. In 7 seasons for the Loon Lions, McDowell averaged 15.8 points. She was league MVP in 2012 and won 3 championships as part of that team. It was a great situation for me. Everything was well arranged for me. I could still play, and I still love playing, McDowell said. I was never the most athletic or quickest player, even in high school. And college, I couldn't rely on my athleticism. I always had to rely on my basketball IQ. So coaching made perfect sense for McDowell. Coaching is a natural transition for me, and for the last couple of years, I started enjoying coaching as much as playing. The only down part about living here is you can't really make a living from coaching. Here, it's more of a hobby. Her full-time job also has a sports focus. She works for the Olympic Network in North Holland, doing video analysis. Though the lure of coaching in the U.S. could eventually draw McDowell back, she's in no hurry to leave the life she's built in Amsterdam. It's a possibility for the future, but I don't know when or for what, she said. I'd never say it's not going to happen, but for the immediate future, I'm happy here. My life is here now. This has been Carol Bond with the July 28th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review and also the Decatur Tribune. I look forward to reading with you again.